Technology has made the world a smaller place, but there is still so much we do not know. Every week, Postcards takes you on a trip of exploration and discovery. From a small village in Afghanistan to a protected cultural heritage site in South America. From Africa's amazing natural landscapes to the most advanced tech displays in the world. Postcards, where you meet the world without actually taking a trip. Postcards.
Hello and welcome to Postcards, a show which takes you across borders without actually leaving home. I'm Wen Jie. A newly built community skate park in the heart of Addis Ababa is helping to spread the sport across the Ethiopian capital. Organizers hope the new location will empower the city's youths and perhaps even cultivate a successful Olympics team for Tokyo 2020. Here's Bob Jones with this postcard from Ethiopia.
On the streets of the Ethiopian capital of Addis Ababa, Californian Seam Stromso is a world away from West Coast US. But wherever there's skateboarding, he's at home. 5 years ago, the photographer began making business trips to the East African country, quickly realizing it lacked the skateboarding scene to which he was so accustomed back at home. By 2013, he decided to move to Ethiopia, striking up instant friendships with young, passionate skateboarders on the streets of Addis Ababa.
So being from California and being just having seen the impact of skateboarding worldwide and how big it is and what it's become, seeing the kids here and their passion for skateboarding and where they're taking it is really cool because they're really true to like the true meaning of skating.
Stromso saw the friendships he'd made as a sign, calling on him to spread his beloved sport across the country. A lot has changed since Stromso arrived on the Addis Ababa skateboarding scene, and there are certainly many more skateboarders roaming the streets. So the next logical step was this, Addis Skate Park. Covering an area of more than 600 square metres, it's the first community skate park to be built in the heart of Ethiopia's bustling capital. Before this, keen young skaters only had parking lots in which to practice.
The need for the skate park kind of came from the passion that all these kids have about skateboarding. And we've been in a parking lot for 3 years. You know, they're skating every day and every weekend. Like, a lot of people meet, like 40-plus people, just to skateboard. And the parking lot it was a great meeting place for us, but it's also, like, exposed. There's traffic, there's bullies, there's everything that comes with an empty parking lot. So the skate park is really necessary so they have a safe and, like, suitable place for it.
At the heart of the Addis Skate Park project is a local community group called Ethiopia Skate. First established in 2013, it's been providing free-of-charge skateboarding gear to around 150 young members. But now, much to the delight of community leader Dr. Michael Beheru, they have a venue to share with local skate fans too. Beheru led a successful online crowdfunding campaign, which raised $35,000. He says the park has the potential to change children's lives.
I've always wanted to be a medical doctor, ever since I started talking. And it's my great passion, and I'm so happy that I achieved it at this young age. And I feel like there's so much to do because I want to help people, and it's the best field to be in if you want to help people. And also with the skating, it's the same phenomena. Like, there's a lot of potential to be able to make a difference in a lot of kids' lives.
After he graduated from university, no one expected Beheru to become involved with local skateboarding, let alone a campaign to build a skate park. But 2 years after forming Ethiopia Skate, the Addis Skate Park has become a reality. Beheru says Ethiopia Skate is not just about helping children learn how to skate. In fact, this is just the beginning.
Ethiopia Skate is about promoting skateboarding and empowering youth. And we want to build as many skateboards as possible, not only in Addis, but throughout Ethiopia, and promote skateboarding. And we want many kids to skate. And we want it to be a sport where youth can empower themselves in, believe in themselves, because the sport is not just about riding on a board, it's about balance, and they can learn a lot from it.
Since being adopted by French parents at the age of two, Ethiopian Bizwayehu Tasema hadn't been back to his Ethiopian homeland. 2 years ago, he returned to his roots and immediately started learning how to skate. Now one of the most active members of the community, he has high hopes for the new skate park, ones that go beyond Addis Ababa and even Ethiopia.
We're going to start teaching, we're going to start competition, and skateboarding is about to become a part of the Olympics. So we believe like we have a skateboard team in Ethiopia. We're building a skateboard team.
Skateboarding, along with baseball, softball, surfing, karate and sport climbing, is set to be voted on as a possible new addition to the Olympics Games for the 2020 Games in Tokyo. Teferi Yared was just 7 years old when he started skateboarding, making him the youngest member of Ethiopia Skate. Now aged 12, he feels he has everything it takes to become a pro skater.
I saw my friends in my neighborhood trying to skate, and I told myself I should try this as well. That is how I became one of the pioneers who started skateboarding in Ethiopia. And now I skate because I love it. I come here so that I can refine my capabilities, and hopefully someday I will be a pro skater.
A young generation discovering a new passion.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
A scream-tastic glass light, 1,000 feet above downtown Los Angeles, is giving U.S. daredevils a welcome adrenaline rush. Attached to the tallest U.S. skyscraper west of Mississippi, SkySlide is also helping Los Angeles Tourist Board reach its ambitious visitor targets for 2020. Here's Michael Butterworth with this postcard from the United States.
If you're afraid of heights, this may be one short journey you'd rather avoid. Perched 1,000 feet above downtown Los Angeles, these brave thrill seekers are sampling the latest addition to the city's visitor attractions. SkySlide, a terrifying 45-foot-long glass tube on the side of the U.S. Bank Tower, opened to the public on June the 25th, and organizers say the queues have not stopped since. More than 5,000 tickets were sold for the grand opening. German Benavides from LA Galaxy soccer team's marketing department has just had a go.
When you're looking at it from down here, you kind of don't think about it much, but when you start going up, it's kind of like, oh, okay, it's getting real. We're getting closer. Okay, he went. Now it's my turn. When I was sitting down, I really felt my heart beating really fast, so it felt like a rush. As I was going down, I enjoyed it halfway, because halfway I kind of like, I don't know if I was sitting wrong, but I kind of bumped myself into the glass thing. But I like the mix of being scared and excited at the same time, so it was a very bipolar rush, if I want to call it that.
SkySlide winds its way from the U.S. Bank Tower's 70th floor down to the 69th. It's the tallest U.S. skyscraper west of the Mississippi River. The building was bought by Singapore-based real estate owner OUE Limited in 2013. OUE says it hasn't yet tallied full attendance numbers, but says the slide has been a resounding success. Singer and video website host Danielle DeLate is enjoying it so much she wants to go again and again.
The view is incredible, for one, just being up here. I think it's the tallest building west of the Mississippi, they were saying upstairs. So just to be up here is quite incredible. And then to be able to do the slide where you go outside of the building, it's unlike anything I've tried before. So I want to get up there and do it again.
For those worried about safety, OUE says the slide is made of 1.25-inch thick, chemically reinforced glass and can withstand winds of up to 110 miles per hour. To be installed, the slide had to be airlifted to the 69th floor, and an intricate pulley system had to inch it in place. Testing took months and included loading sandbags on it to determine how much weight the slide could carry. John Gambo from OUE claims it's an engineering and technical feat.
The slide itself, all of it put together, is 45 feet, and it connects the 70th floor to the 69th floor. You essentially enter the slide from inside the 70th floor, and it shoots you down to the open-air terrace on the 69th. It's approximately 10,000 pounds all put together when you add up the steel outriggers, the fittings, and all the glass. It's been designed with a software that was initially developed by NASA. The glass for the slide is 3-ply. In total, it's about 1.25 inches thick, and it's been chemically reinforced by a substance, again, that's been used in aerospace.
SkySlide is part of an interactive audio-visual experience called OUE SkySpace, which also includes an open-air observation deck, bar, and various interactive displays. They've all been created as part of a $50 million renovation project. Lucy Rumantier, President and CEO of OUE Limited, says the new slide is playing its part in attracting new tourists to the so-called City of Angels.
The response from the city and from the whole Los Angeles was so amazing. We were so surprised that this attraction is something that LA have been waiting for so long. And we got a very positive feedback from LA Tourism Board. They said that their target to achieve 50 million tourists to LA by 2020. So with this attraction being in LA, especially in downtown, is going to help LA Tourism Board to achieve their target. And we are happy to be part of them.
The OUE SkySpace LA experience also includes this 360-degree video wall of Los Angeles topography and this infinity mirror, which creates the experience of walking over an open elevator shaft several floors above the ground.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. The art of violin making is not only still very much alive in Italy, it is now growing ever more popular among young people. The starting prize for a handcrafted violin is 5,000 euros with no end prize. But each one requires hundreds of hours of high-skilled, painstaking precision work to create the perfect instrument. Here's Nick Lanigan with this postcard from Italy.
In this quiet pedestrian street in Pavia, a simply laid-out window display shows a few examples of Marco Brunello's work. But the magic happens in the shop's back room, where Marco Brunello is lovingly handcrafting a violin. This hasn't always been part of the 44-year-old's career plan. After working as an engineer for 10 years, he decided to let job security go for more hands-on work. He trained with instrument makers to learn the craft before setting up his own shop in 2010. Now Brunello creates about 10 violins a year, each involving about 200 to 300 hours of work. Everything is handmade, inside and out, and every violin maker manages to make his creations unique. The price for a single creation starts from 5,000 euros, but Brunello believes there is no limit to how high the price can rise, depending on the prestige of the violin maker and his particular skills.
La scultura del riccio ancora oggi è una parte significativa.
The sculpting of the violin scroll, still today, is a significant part of the instrument because it carries the signature of the artist, of the violin maker that sculpted it. How the head turns, how the different parts come out, how deep, how hollow, these are all distinctive elements of the violin maker.
Violin making has a long history in Italy, and while machines have inevitably replaced some crafts, the art of creating handmade instruments has not lost its prestige. It continues to attract people for its distinctive methodology. In Italy, in fact, the art of creating and repairing handcrafted musical instruments is growing. While the central location of this craft is Cremona, well known for the Stradivarius violins, the craftsmanship is growing in other cities across Italy, such as Pavia and Milan.
The Italian art of making stringed instruments is doing well because Italians are still seen as people with an exemplary artistic taste and a taste for beautiful things.
80% of Brunello's orders come from abroad, mainly from Asia. By respecting the standards of the past, the Italian vision becomes an asset and must continue to be put to good use, according to Brunello.
Ci sta benissimo la tecnologia.
Professions that make use of ultra-modern technology, full-time jobs, job security, all of this is respectable. But we also need to understand that there are other professions out there that are fulfilling that we shouldn't and mustn't abandon.
And unlike many traditional crafts, younger generations are in fact jumping on board. At Milan's School of Stringed Instrument Making, Civica Scuola di Liuteria di Milano, more and more students are looking into the profession. Admissions are getting more selective as the school only admits a total of 15 students on average each year for the two available modules, Stringed Instrument Making and Plucked Instrument Making. The course, which lasts 4 years, teaches students how to use the tools and later how to make their very own instruments, as Paola Vecchio, professor in stringed instrument making, explains.
Nel primo biennio noi diamo solo ed esclusivamente delle basi tecniche.
During the first 2 years, we only give them the technical foundations. We tell them to work a certain way because what interests us is now the final product, but for them to learn how to use the tools to make the instruments. During the third and fourth years, we have more of an individual relationship with each student. At that stage, they can choose their instrument, design it, and are quite autonomous. I make sure that the technical aspect is done correctly, but everything that is subjective, such as the sculpting of the scroll, the outline, the tips, all these elements are a means for them to express themselves. These aspects are very subjective, and you can in fact recognize an instrument made by one student compared to another.
Most of the students here are in their 20s. 15% are foreign, and all seem delighted to be learning the craft, either for their passion for carving, music, or simply because it is part of their family history. 22-year-old Franco Ferloni is in his fourth year.
La gioia più grande nel costruire, almeno per me.
For me, the greatest joy when making a violin is when I assemble the strings, when in fact I can play the violin.
But succeeding as an instrument maker in the real world is not as easy as one might think. In Italy, many instrument makers work alone, making it difficult to find a job working with someone with experience. For this reason, many students end up going abroad to get experience in bigger labs before setting up shop autonomously in their home country. Milan's School of Stringed Instrument Making has been open since 1978. According to the school's own records, only half of all their past students are now instrument makers. 32-year-old Tania Fausti is well aware that it will take time to make her dream come true.
Here we can learn a method, but we will of course have to improve our technique and style by comparing ourselves to others, beginning by working in different labs, for example, until we can create our own style, our own characteristics, in order to be able to create our very own instruments.
Meanwhile, everyone is hard at work to get as much feedback as they can in the little time they have left. Once they have finished the course, it will be up to them to make the best of their acquired skills. Their creations are left behind because the students do not own the instruments they make at the school. The best pieces are proudly exhibited in a small museum on the bottom floor of the school, each one with its very unique characteristics.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. An underwater robot, which could save the Great Barrier Reef from an invading starfish, is being tested in Australia. The COT Spot will inject poison into the crown of thorn starfish. Before we come to the end of today's show, I would like to share with you an extra postcard from Australia. It's no bigger than a dinner plate, but collectively, the crown of thorn starfish makes up one of the biggest threats to the Great Barrier Reef. But researchers in the state of Queensland are working on a robot that could help turn the tide. The yellow submarine robot, known as the COT Spot, looks like a sophisticated toy. It's been 10 years in development, and if it reaches its potential, it could be a big weapon in the fight for the reef. Matt Dambabin is from the Queensland University of Technology.
It's only still basically this year that we've been able to really hit it hard and come up with a solution that we think can really make a difference.
The crown of thorn starfish, also known as COTS, are marine invertebrates that feed on coral. They occur naturally on reefs throughout the Indo-Pacific region, and when conditions are right, they can reach plate proportions and devastate hard coral communities. The Australian Institute of Marine Research estimates that they are responsible for 40% of the reef's total decline in coral cover. The problem of the crown of thorn starfish is being tackled by a range of programs, including managing water quality, monitoring, and eradication. Divers are used to hunt out the predators and inject them with a toxic solution. These researchers want the COT Spot to do the same.
They just don't have enough people. We need a force multiplier that is actually going to make a difference on the reef. We can scale it up, target thing, and actually try and reduce the impact that this pest is having.
The underwater robot will be sent to seek and destroy within a GPS-mapped area. It will search the reef for up to 8 hours at a time and be able to deliver more than 200 lethal shots.
We have a what we call mow the lawn pattern that will just target, and it will just mow the lawn looking for crown of thorn starfish. It detects one, administer the injection, and move on.
It's been trying to pick out the pests from other sea life through the use of film and 3D printed models. Faraz Dayoub is also from the Queensland University of Technology.
The system has seen thousands of images of cots and not cots, and now it's able to detect and decide which one is cots and which one is not.
The COT Spot has successfully undergone trials in a shelter bay. The next challenge is to test it in strong water currents and the open ocean. Researchers are hoping to have the robot fully operational on the reef soon. With that, we wrap up today's postcards. Your comments, suggestions, or questions are always appreciated. And you can contact us via email at postcards@cri.com.cn. For program producer Zhao Jianfu, I'm Wen Jie. See you next week.